ॐ जननीं शारदां देवीं रामकृष्णं जगद्गुरुं पादपद्मेतयोश्रित्वा प्रणमामि मुहुर्मुहुः। ॐ आप्यायन्तु ममाङ्गानि वाक्प्राणश्चक्षुः श्रोत्रमथो बलम् इन्द्रियाणि च सर्वाणि सर्वम् ब्रह्मोपनिषदम् माहम् ब्रह्म निराकुर्याम् मा ब्रह्म निराकरोत् अनिराकरणमस्त्वनिराकरणम् मे अस्तु। तदात्मनि निरतेय उपनिषत्सु धर्मास्ते मयि सन्तु ते मयि सन्तु। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः हरेः। ॐ ॐ मे my limbs, speech, vital force, eyes, ears, as also strength and all the organs become well developed. Everything is the Brahman revealed in the Upanishads. May I not deny Brahman, may not Brahman deny me. Let there be no rejecting of me by Brahman. Let there be no rejection of Brahman by me. May all the virtues that are spoken of in the Upanishads repose in me, who am engaged in the pursuit of the Self. May all these qualities repose in me. Om, peace, peace, peace be unto all. Om, keneshitam patati preshitam manaha, kena pranaha prathamaha praiti yuktaha, keneshitam vachamimam vadante, Chakshu Shrotram Kavudevo Yunakti. The disciple asked the teacher, Om, by whose will directed does the mind proceed to its object? At whose command does the prana, the foremost, do its duty? At whose will do men utter speech? Who is the God that directs the eyes and ears? Through this question, everything that we experience in the life, there must be a principle called, usually called by all of us as God. And I want to know about that God. Therefore, this question has been put. If a student knows that there is a God, but why does he want to know? Because we have faith. Direct realization is the only way of knowing absolutely about anything. And by doing sadhana, a person becomes one with God, or as I said, I always substitute the word Brahman with the word God. Not merely the English meaning creator and maintainer and destroyer God, but Brahman, a nirguna Brahman. So, we do not know about Brahman, but indirectly we know about Brahman. That's what we are going to discuss now. But even though we have faith that there is Brahman, there is a God, and that knowledge is because of our faith in the scriptures, our faith in the Guru, our faith in the saints. But until we directly become one with that, we will never know anything about that God. Therefore, the question is, I know by faith that there is a God. I want to realize Him. Naturally, the question that comes is, why do you want to realize God? Because you are able to experience the whole universe. How does one experience the universe? Through the body and the mind. And what is the body consisting of? All these 10 organs, 5 of knowledge and 5 of action, then through the mind and through the understanding, buddhi, we are experiencing directly. Then what is the problem? The problem is, only an intelligent person can analyze our experience and come to certain very definite conclusions. What is that? Now, before I proceed to that, I have to explain something. How is the student able to ask such a crystallized and condensed question, targeted question, because there is a fact of which we should be aware. There is a background which determines how a person asks certain questions. For example, a Christian will ask a question, I believe through the Bible that there is something called hell, something called heaven. So naturally, heaven is a place where I can enjoy. What is wrong with the enjoyment on earth? The enjoyments on earth, as we have discussed, they are continuously changing, continuously dying. And I explained in my last class, if my attention, if my consciousness is not thinking that particular object, that particular thought of that particular object, that means that particular object practically ceases to exist. Whatever we think at any given moment is the only thing that is existing. And that is what we call change. So, I have faith that there is a heaven and a hell, and it can give me far better happiness. Hell means far worse than what I suffer, and enjoyment or suffering are common experiences. But what is the nature of that experience? In the last class, we have outlined everything that is experienced is called an object. And every object, first of all, it is external. Second, it is concrete. Third, it comes and disappears. So, all these characteristics are there. And including that no one can experience an object excepting through the qualities. For example, if you want to see fruit, what type of fruit, what color, what size, what taste, these are called Shabda, Sparsha, Rupa, Rasa, Gandha. Every object in this world is made up of Panchabhutas, and so every object in this world exhibits all the five elements, albeit some are exhibited more prominently, some are not so prominent, but all the five we can definitely get proof. What is the nature? They're external and they exist only so long as I am aware of them, and they are changing continuously. They are in fact dying. And the instruments with which I experience this external world is the body and mind. My body is continuously growing from birth until one day it will completely disappear. Alright, what about the sense organs? They also become gradually, they increase in capacity, but gradually decrease. When I become old, I cannot see properly, I cannot hear properly, I cannot run properly, I cannot sit properly. What about the prana? Yes, even if the body is sleeping, sense organs are sleeping, but the prana will be there. What about the mind? Without prana, the mind also cannot function. So, everything seems to be dependent upon something else. So, the body, the sense organs, the mind, the prana, everything is changing. But there is some principle which is witnessing this continuous change, because even to know that something is changing, the law is that there must be an unchanging eternal witness should be there. And this much the student understood. Because this is not understood by 99% of the people. But here is a very intelligent student. So first, through experience, he understood everything is changing. Death is another change. So body is changing, mind is changing. Prana also will go at the time of death. And this applies to the whole world. And that which is, that which undergoes all these changes is called an object. But there is an unchanging witness. Call it the knower, call it the what is called drik, or call it the witness, sakshi, by whatever name. I know that there is, because this much the logic tells me, our rational mind can tell me. But then, Is there something permanent? I do not know about that. And for that, I have to go to the scriptures, and scriptures are expounded, taught to me, very nicely interpreted to me by Swamis or knowing people, especially by the Guru. There is a God. We are coming from that God. We live because of that God. We live because that God sustains us. He enlivens us, etc. So behind everything in this world, there is that God, and there is a law. Whatever comes out, which is called an effect, must go back to the cause, and the cause of all causes is God. So everybody must go back to God. And this he understood, the student understood from the scriptures. That is why he has complete faith, he is endowed with Shraddha. So he understood that there is some principle, and that is why this particular question is asked. Now this particular question, is there something which is called Deva? Deva means Atma. Atma means pure Chaitanya. Pure Chaitanya means that which is unborn, that which is eternal, that which is beyond, very important, that which is beyond or having all the opposite qualities of the object. What are the opposite qualities? It is not external, it is not concrete, it is not changing, and it is ever the witness, it is eternal. So all these beautifully described practically in every scripture, especially in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. So I have faith, there is a God. Another factor also comes into play here. So supposing the world is a normal world, everybody, everything in this world is more or less the same thing, excepting for minor differences. But what is our experience? Everything in this world, there is a tremendous amount of differences. Rich, very rich man, poor man, very learned man, very ignorant person, very wise person, very unwise person, physically very healthy person, very unhealthy person, mentally very bright and intelligent person, very dull and stupid person, autistic person, disabled person, mentally sick person, and some people, they more or less enjoy many things. A few people, most of the people, they suffer. Why do I say that? Because I am not tired of repeating, having wealth is not equal to happiness. Happiness is a state of the mind, and when the mind is kept in a particular state, which is called samatvam or equanimity or wisdom, then the highest enjoyment can come. Simple example, I will give these type of examples any number of times. A person is eating, his happiness is limited. A person is bright intellectually, he can understand ideas, so his happiness is far superior. Suppose a person has a highly developed aesthetic sense, his happiness is a billionfold. Supposing a person leads very truthful life, a truthful person is very near to truth, and therefore his happiness, which is satyam, jnanam, anantam or anandam brahma, is incomparable. And so there is vast difference between one person and another person, or even between the same person previously, but through spiritual practice, the same person now, extreme difference will be there. Now the person is full of peace, full of happiness, contentment. We can see that ourselves. So the question now is that everything in this world is changing, in other words, subject to death. And we have told you, we discussed in our studies class, two types of death are there. Every one of us recognizes, suppose a person died, we know what is death. But if a person is quite intelligent, he can also understand every minute is a death, because every minute are subject to time, subject to change. Change means death. That is why the name for death in Sanskrit is called Kala. Many local languages use this word, that his time has come. Time has come. So, he died. Instead of saying died, a time has come. And that is the word we use. We know that. But then, Vedanta talks of another death. What is that? There is no need to physically die. The moment we go into dreaming state, the whole waking state is dead. Everything, our house, our family, even our body, our near and dear, our bank balance, everything is dead. Where? In dream state. Not only in dream state. Even in the deep sleep state, a person doesn't know he's a rich man, he's a learned man. As I say, an Einstein in the waking state is absolutely ignorant person in deep sleep state. So this is what Vedanta tells. And this death is occurring not only when we enter into the dream or the deep sleep, it is occurring practically every millisecond. How come? At the moment, we have two thoughts. How do we say two thoughts? One thought comes to an end and another thought begins. But there is a no man's land between two thoughts. And when we end one thought and enter into the second thought, in between, the entire waking state, dream state, dreamless state, everything comes to an end. And an intelligent student, and the student, we must remember, must have practiced spiritual practice for many, many births, and he is not only convinced through the scripture, through practical experience, he knows, I am changing continuously, change is death, and I don't like this change, and I want the something which is behind this changeful nature, which is eternal. Eternal means unchanging, and that is called Sat Chit Ananda, and that is called Atma. So I know about this Atma because I have studied the scriptures for a long time. Talk about the scriptures. Tell me about the Atma. Why should he ask? Because he has studied scriptures, because there is a law. Unless these scriptural truths come through the mouth of an realized soul, they will not become really convincing, they will not transform us, they will not affect us. Sri Ramakrishna's simple words are there, that unless God authorizes the talks, the lectures, the speeches of an unauthorized person, doesn't change anything. Of course, the person himself is not changing. First of all, he should change. So what is the law? The law is only a changed person, changed for the better. Only his words will be completely changed. There is a chance of changing another person who is also ready to be changed. So, two conditions. The person who wants to change must be leading an authentic life. That means he is a changed person. And the person who wants to be changed must also develop certain qualifications, which is called adhikaritva, which I explained. Sadhana, Chatushtayi Sampatti, Viveka, Vairagya, Shamadamadi Shatka Sampatti, and Mumukshut. And then the Upanishad itself tells, Chandogya specifically tells, I heard that only those words which come from the mouth of a realized soul alone can bring true conviction in the qualified students or hearers. Therefore, a student, he has faith through the scriptures. Now he wants confirmation. So by coming to the Guru, he gains many prophets are there, but two important prophets are there. One is, first of all, his faith becomes absolutely unassailable. It cannot be changed at all. Second is, by looking at the life the teacher is leading, this is called Sthita Prajna Lakshana. He will be able to, he will get the courage, he will get the inspiration, and he will have the audacity to slowly change his own life. That is why this is what Ramakrishna says, a person, a God authorized person alone can help. So, say Ramakrishna's words are absolutely in accordance with the scriptural these things. So, behind the everything in this world, behind my body which experiences such a world, behind the sense organs, and behind the prana, and behind the mind, behind everything, there is a conscious principle. Only when I am conscious, I have knowledge through experience. Therefore, I know the world doesn't have that consciousness. The sense organs do not have that chaitanya. The body doesn't have, the mind doesn't have, even the prana doesn't have. So, who is the root cause? Because all these things are completely inert. But then what do we see? When we look at a mountain, at a stone, we know that there is no prana. Therefore, we know there is no consciousness. But when we look at any living creature, there is life, there is a mind, there is a body, there are sense organs, and if you put your hand to strike it, it will avoid. Even a mosquito you cannot easily catch. It is much cleverer than even a human being in some respect. Then we know that just as that mosquito doesn't have really consciousness, but it is exhibiting consciousness, and therefore what is the conclusion? That it doesn't have, but it seems to have. It must have borrowed. There is a poor person. Suddenly, he is spending a lot of money. So, what is the idea? He must have borrowed it from somebody, or he must have stolen it from somebody. Somehow or other, he got what he did not have. And that is what Ramakrishna illustrates. A beautiful illustration. There was a rich jamindar who was very powerful and very wicked. There was a poor man. Absolutely nothing is there. Suddenly the poor man goes to a court. He institutes a law case against that rich jamindar. How can he do that? Because he doesn't have the initial fees. He went to institute of a case in the court. Then people understand there must be a rich man behind that poor man who is suing the other jamindar, not directly, but through the medium of this person. So, if a teacher is having the tremendous power of teaching, he doesn't have it, his body doesn't have, his mind doesn't have, but he must be borrowing. Borrowing from whom? From Medha Devi. That is why we chant Medha Suktam, so that she can lend for the time being, and that helps us. That can help also others in some cases, but mainly it helps only me. With that help, then I can do sadhana, I can attain siddhi, and then say, oh mother, thank you very much. Here I am returning with compound interest, everything like that. So that is the question that we see here. And what is the question? Om kena ishitam patati preshitam manaha kena pranaha prathamaha praityuktaha kena ishitam vacham imam vadanti chakshuh srotram kavadevo yunakti. A disciple asked the, we don't know who is the disciple, much less we know who is the teacher, but it doesn't matter. And very qualified disciple asking a realized teacher, because no other person can give this answer excepting a realized soul. And a realized soul, realized souls, according to Sri Ramakrishna, are of two types. Those who are authorized and those who are not authorized. There are some people, because of whatever reason, their body mind remains, they are enlightened, they are called Jivan Muktas, but their role seems to be just to live as long as the body lasts, and after that they attain what is called Videha Mukti or Sadhyo Mukti. Whereas there are some people who are authorized, people are attracted to them, and they come like Rama, like Krishna, like Buddha, like Jesus, and like Swami Vivekananda, and they have the power. And what is that power? Very interesting. Even Swami Vivekananda, you ask him, are you A person who has this knowledge, he says, no, no, no. Ami Jantra, Tumi Jantri. I am only an instrument. It is only Sri Ramakrishna who is working through me. There are very interesting incidents. One Swamiji was staying in America in a devotee's house, and suddenly the whole night the hostess was hearing two people talking like that. Next, but she knows there was nobody else in that room excepting Vivekananda. So next morning she asked, Swamiji, with whom are you talking? The very voices were different. That means she guessed there must be two different persons, because two different voices. Swamiji laughed and bypassed the answer. No, no, no. I am only talking to myself. And if you are more intelligent than that lady, you will ask, Swamiji, I crystal clearly heard two separate voices. Then Swami Vivekananda, don't you know, once upon a time I was acting in the dramas and I can imitate two people, and maybe I am an ventriloquist. Who knows? Anyway, so you ask Ramakrishna, and he says, I don't know anything. I only know how to eat and drink. It is my mother who speaks, who arouses the consciousness of the other people, who listens to the prayers of the devotees. I have nothing to do with it. That is what he calls when Sri Ramakrishna enters into a particular ecstatic state. What it means is he hands over the responsibilities, the problem, to the Divine Mother, and then the Divine Mother solves through, of course, through that, like water raining on a roof, but the water comes out from the roof through the mouths of some pipes. They may look like the mouths of a dog or a human being or a lion, etc. None of them claim that I am speaking. They only claim that it is the divine that really speaks. So the disciple's question is that he knows this is a realized soul, and who is speaking? Atman. Because who can talk about Atman? Only Atma. Who can talk about Brahman? Only Brahman. Who can talk about Divine Mother? Only Divine Mother. Who can talk about God? Only God. And we know the answer. So what is it? By whose will directed does the mind proceed to the object? What is the function of the mind? Four functions. That is, cogitating this or that, remembering, coming to a definite conclusion, this is what I am seeing, and I know this is that particular object. All these things it cannot do because the prana supports it. But where from the prana getting that power? Because prana, remember, is only vayu tattva. Akashad vayu, that vayu becomes this prana. Therefore, this prana came from akasha, and akasha came from atma. So it is the manifestation. So prana also is not the final answer. Then what is the final answer? Atma. But the teacher doesn't want to tell directly. So these are the specific questions, that how does the mind function? Because we know the mind is inert. The answer is, it seems to be functioning. Functioning means it is conscious. Consciousness means it is inert. Inert, if it is, the mind is inert, it can never function. But it seems to be having consciousness, chaitanyam. And therefore, like the poor man who is backed by the rich man, this poor mind is backed by Atma Tattvam, which we, in other words, we call Chidabhasa, reflected consciousness. And then behind the mind, because even when the mind is functioning, the prana functions. How does it do? Because when we are in the deep sleep state, then the mind doesn't work. The organs, the body doesn't work. The whole world is not, of course, not there. But the prana is there. But this prana, we know that either sooner or later, prana also departs. Therefore, who enlivens the prana itself? So that is the question that comes. Who is behind the mind? so that borrowing that consciousness, the mind is able to function, thinking and cogitating and remembering and coming to the right conclusion and giving orders, etc. Then, who is behind the mind? Apparent answer is pranaha. This prana is called primary prathamaha. Praityukta. What is the cause? Who inspires the prana? How does it get the pranic power from where? Because we know prana is only manifestation of the second of the five elements, which is called vayu tattva. Therefore, we want to know who is the cause of the mind, prana. Who is the cause of the prana? That is what? Then, kena ishitam vacham imam vadanti. That is to say, compelled by whom, inspired by whom, propelled by whom, enlivened by whom, vacham imam vadanti. A person speaks. How does he speak? He must be conscious. He must be having a mind. He must be remembering. He must be understanding what was asked or what should be told. And he must be having prana. That means all the karmendriyas, five organs of action. They cannot function without that power. So how are they seem to be functioning? Then what about the organs of knowledge? Chakshuhu, shrotram. Then chakshuhu means the eyes. Shrotram means the ear. When we are in deep sleep, there is no awareness or consciousness. Therefore, the eyes may be open. They can't see. And the ears are always open, but we can't hear. So therefore, there must be somebody behind all these, behind the karmendriyas, behind the sense organs of knowledge, behind the mind, behind the prana, there must be somebody. And what should be the nature of that somebody? Devaha, pure consciousness. Why? Because all these are inert. Whatever doesn't have consciousness, they are called anatma. Anatma means inert. They don't even know they exist. A table doesn't know it doesn't exist. What about my body? My body doesn't know it exists. What about my mind? My mind knows that the body exists, the world exists, the sense organs exist, only because behind it there is consciousness. How do we know? Just now I mentioned. When we are in deep sleep, consciousness or the mind and body are bereft of consciousness. Therefore, first thing that happens is the world disappears. Second thing that happens is the body disappears. Third thing that happens is the mind disappears. Fourth thing that happens is even though prana is there, but the being is not aware that I am still alive. Others know the person is alive. That person himself doesn't know that it is not alive. So, therefore, since all these are alive, since the world is cognized, the world is interacted with, there must be some principle, some vital force, which is enlivening, which is propelling, and it must be one behind everybody, behind the whole world, behind everybody, behind every mind, behind every prana. This is the beautiful question. And why did the disciple ask? Because he heard about God, about Atman. He knows about the Atman. He knows, as I mentioned, theoretically, but he wants to hear the answer from the teacher's mouth. Now, what does the teacher say? The teacher also gives indirectly answer. Why does he give indirect answer? I will come to that. We will enter into the second mantra. So, the first mantra says, that what is that principle? Who is that Deva? Who is that pure consciousness because of which the prana functions, the mind functions, the body functions, and because of which we perceive the entire jagat and then act, interact, all those things. So, also the one very important point that we see so much of difference among beings. I raised that point. What is the reason? Reason is, the scripture tells, everybody gets the result of the karma done in the past. Where does this answer lead us? Very, very important. Hinduism, Buddhism, Sikhism, Jainism crystal clearly accept. We have many Churasi lakh past lives, and we are going to have we don't know how many crores of future births. What is the criteria? Until we know that we are the Atman, until we are completely attained mukti, and that is the primary goal of this student, we will be having all births. Every birth is an opportunity. So what is the point? The point is, even if a person dies, we believe from the scriptures that person is not dead. Life doesn't end permanently. It is just like changing it, wore an old dress and putting on a new dress. Every physical body is compared to a new dress. That means life continues. That means mind also continues. That means there is no death. That means we are all deathless. That is the conclusion. Each one of us come, and nobody wants to say, I am going to become non-existent. So, this is one very important point. Karma phala is what makes the difference between even one mosquito and the other mosquito. I'll give an illustration in case your imagination doesn't run that far. There are fortunate mosquitoes. There are fortunate, unfortunate, sinful mosquitoes. How do you understand that? Well, that mosquito which enters into the royal chamber and bites, has the opportunity of biting and sucking the blood of Queen Elizabeth or Putin or President of America or Prime Minister of India, must be extraordinarily done. A lot of alright. But even better qualified mosquitoes are there. Those mosquitoes which had the capacity to suck the blood of Sri Ramakrishna, Holy Mother and Swami Vivekananda. Just imagine. Why? There is an adage which says that you are what you eat. So if the mosquito eats Holy Mother, what does it become? Holy Mother. A mosquito bites Sri Ramakrishna, what does it become? Only Sri Ramakrishna. A mosquito bites Swami Vivekananda, what does it become? Swami Vivekananda. Poor mosquitoes which bite these sinful people, what does these mosquitoes become? Sinful. That's why just making fun, some devotee asked me that about other devotees, why are they so jealous and biting each other, always biting and what is called stinging about other devotees, sometimes in front, sometimes behind the back. Why? The only answer Sri Ramakrishna gave me is when Sri Ramakrishna used to go to answer calls of nature, these mosquitoes somehow were lucky enough to suck his blood. As a result, they became like him, good devotees. But their mosquito samskaras have not disappeared, and that is why they have not been able to give up, even in this life, their mosquito. But what I am trying to tell you, there are lucky mosquitoes, there are unlucky mosquitoes. A dog in New York by a rich person is petted, bathed and clothed and powdered, and golden chain will be there, golden winter clothing will be there. So you cannot but wonder, they must have done lot of good deeds in their life. Anyway, just even though I am making fun, but there must be some reason, because an effect must have a definite reason behind it. So, coming back, when a disciple observes all these things, he comes to know this is all the result of what a being has done in the past. If that is true, that means death is meaningless, because we think that the person dies. Person doesn't die. The body, it becomes useless and a new body is given. So, this, that means life continues. Prana doesn't have any non-existence. Mind doesn't have non-existence. So, nothing will have non-existence. Even the body will not have a non-existence. Like, if the dress is worn, like recycling, it is taken back, like recycling plastic or anything, and out of it a renewed body is created, and every body is created only from the Panchabhutas. So nothing has really death, because everything came from Brahman and everything will remain Brahman. But all the changes that we see and that are going to come will happen only in the mind, in the form of knowledge, and not anything else. Now, in the second mantra, the answer is given, and this second mantra is the very essence of Kena Upanishad, of 34 mantras, and this is elaborated in all the other 33 mantras. And one point before we go into this second mantra, and that is, this teacher cannot answer, here is the God who is behind the prana, the mana, the mind, the body, sense organs, organs of action, and the entire world. No, he cannot tell that. Why? Because we human beings, even the most intelligent human beings, we have learned the art of objectifying everything. That is why when Sri Ramakrishna was asked by Totapuri that why remove even the thought of your mother, he said, I can remove every thought excepting my Ananda Mahima, because this is also called Brahma Akara Vrutti. Akara means form. It is a form. And that which has a form has a name. And that which has got name and form is an object, because it comes and it goes. Therefore, if you want Brahman, all this should be Nama Rupa and Deshakala Vastu Atita. That state we must attain. That means mind must be totally negated, because thoughts means mind, and there is no mind without thoughts. So we must become mindless, that is, merge the mind in its source, which is called Brahman. Sri Ramakrishna, we know the story. He said, I could not. Then Totapuri takes a broken piece of glass, presses it in the forehead, and then by God's grace, mother's grace, that thought also disappeared. And then there is no subject object, there is no knower known, and everything becomes one, not like Sushupti state, but fully enlightened state called Samadhi. Therefore, the teacher wants to avoid, what is that? That is a tree. What is the other thing? That is a hill. What is the other thing? That is a bird. If you say God is like that, oh, among many objects, God is also an object. Objectifying is the nature of the mind. Therefore, he must give an answer which avoids this objectification and then understands. That is called the methodology of neti neti. Not this, not this. So this is what he is answering with this background, and you must keep every point that I am telling you, then only you will be able to grasp it properly. What was the answer? And this answer alone is the real answer for the question. The rest is elaboration. Shrotrasya shrotram, manasaha manoyat, vachoha vacham, sau pranasya pranaha, chakshushaha chakshuhu, atimuchya dhiraha, pretya asmat lokat, amruta bhavanti. The teacher replied, it is the ear of the ear, the mind of the mind, the speech of the speech, the life of life, and the eye of the eye. Having detached the self from all the sense organs and having given up attachment to the world called renunciation, the wise attain to immortality. So, who is that real force behind it? The straightforward answer is Atma. Atman means pure consciousness. This is not at all difficult to understand. Why? Because when you are deeply asleep, what is missing? The consciousness is missing. Missing means it is not dead, but it is not functioning with regard to the body and mind. But it is there. How do we know? Because I am deeply asleep. That experience is also possible only because of pure consciousness. I was in the waking state. Then when I enter into the dream state, I was in the dream state. Then when I enter into the sleep state, I am in this Sushupti state. to be able to say, there must be a witness. So, what does it indicate? It indicates the witness must be separate from that which is witnessed. That means the Atman must be separate from the world, from the body, from the mind, from the prana, from everything. Even though slightly different words are used, it means, oh, disciple, you have asked me that who is that? Who makes the mind function? Who makes the prana function? Who makes the all the sense organs, all the organs of action? Who makes me cognize the entire what we call world consisting of the living and non-living? Who is the final enlivener? Final one. The answer is consciousness. So, some of the words used are exact same words, but some words are omitted. For example, what is called vak. Vak means the representation of all the five organs of action. They are not here, but they are indicated here. Even it is also indicated here. I said that is not correct. Vachoha vacha, manaha manasu, protrishut. Slightly rearranged the words. What is the answer? That pure consciousness, it is the real hearer, it is the real mind, it is the real speaker, it is the real prana, it is the real I, and he who understands this, such a person is called a wise person, called dhiraha. And then what is the result of this knowledge? And this is the true knowledge, and this true knowledge, what happens? It releases that person from the bondage of this samsara. So what happens? Pretya, having been dead to this world, not necessarily physically death, but it means having been dead to the idea that I am the body-mind complex, a person completely detached from mind-body complex, asmat lokat pretya, that means having detached from this world, that is called death in this particular mantra. Amrutaha bhavanti, they become amrutasya putraha, that means they become free, that means they know aham brahmasmi, aham atma asmi, I am none of these things. But one important point here, then there are two things. One is called Atman, another is called the prana, the mind and the body consisting of the organs of knowledge, organs of action, and the entire external world. No. What it means is that one pure consciousness has become the five elements. Those five elements are of two types, the subtle and the gross. The sukshma bhutas make up the prana, mind, everything, and the gross bhutas make up of the entire physical body consisting of the eye or the hands and feet, etc., and the entire external world. It is not the external world and the body, and then the mind, and then the prana, and everything is made up of panchabhutas, and the panchabhutas are the result of the manifestations of that one consciousness. Therefore, nothing can be excluded. The whole purpose is to make us aware that once we are aware that it is the consciousness which is the root cause of our prana, our mind, our body consisting of 10 organs and the entire world, they are not excluded. Now, I will summarize this thing in my own way. Say, you want to see. There is, you open the eyes. Then what do you notice? You notice that there is a tree. How did you notice? Because there is awareness in you. That awareness starts with the prana and it percolates to mind, and then it percolates to the sense organs, and particularly the organs of eye, seeing and hearing, etc. Shabda, sparsha, rupa, rasa, gandha, and then it perceives. Then what do you say? I know there is a tree. The moment your mind turns its attention to something else. This is a dog, for example. A whole tree has become disappeared. Oh, you may say, but it is there. I may not take notice, but it is there. It doesn't matter if I don't take notice. For example, I absorbed in seeing a beautiful flower and a ferocious tiger is standing behind me or near me, observing me, watching me, about to jump up. Even if I don't notice it, it doesn't die. But what it means is, I am blissfully unaware of it. That is this condition of the deep sleep. And that is why study of the Mandukya Upanishad, especially with the Karikas of Gaudapada and with the commentary of Shankaracharya, very, very important. What am I trying to tell you? That consciousness has become everything. How did it become everything? Because the eye, through the eye, consciousness goes, assumes, envelops in this example that tree, and it brings the knowledge of the tree through the eye, through the nerve centers, to the mind, and from the mind endowed with the awareness, but supported by the prana, it immediately cognizes. Cognition means it is a thought. Thought means it is a form of knowledge. Knowledge means it is a manifestation of consciousness. So everything is consciousness. What is wrong then with our condition? As I said, everything is changing. But to recognize everything is Atman, there is nothing which is changeful, there is nothing which is temporary, there is no difference between called happiness and unhappiness, and profit and loss, and cold and heat, and life and death. Everything is Sat, Chit, and Ananda. And that is that knowledge. Once we get, then our problem is finished. Afterwards, what happens to the world? Will it disappear? Not necessarily. For a Jivan Mukta, he interacts with the whole world, but now he has got a double vision. What is the vision? That one, everything is Brahman. That is one vision. And second is, that same Brahman is now playing in the form of the world, the body, the sense organs, and the nerve centers, and the mind, and the prana, all the, in other words, the waking state, and dream state, and deep sleep state. They are not unreal. They are unreal only when you think they are temporary, and they are absolutely real only when you know they are nothing but pure consciousness projected. In some way is called waking, in another way is called dream, in another way is called deep sleep. Just like when the light is switched off in a cinema theater, everything disappears. A person is walking, that disappears. Person is lying down and dreaming, he disappears. Person is in deep sleep, that disappears. A tiger is about to pounce upon a man, that disappears. Everything disappears. Let the light come, everything appears. So the tiger, the victim, and everything that happens is seen. It is nothing but different manifestations of the light as light and shade. Color is also a form of light only. So therefore, it is a what is called complete vision. That complete vision is what the teacher is talking about when he is telling. So you have to transcend, go beyond from the gross to the subtle and to the causal, and beyond the causal, that is called, he is the ear of the ear, the mind of the mind, the speech of the speech, and the life of life, the eye of the eye. And having understood this and separated that I am not the world, I am not the body, I am not the senses, I am the self, then everything you enjoy, it becomes a leela, it doesn't become a maya. And such people who have this complete knowledge is called a dhiraha. And what does he gain? He becomes free. And this is a marvelous subject. We'll talk about it in our next class. Om Jananim Sharadam Devim Ramakrishnam Jagadgurum Padapadme Tayo Sritva Pranamami Mohar Moho. May the Ramakrishna Holy Mother and Swami Vivekananda bless us all with bhakti. Jai Ramakrishna.